Take your seats.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Colleagues on the county board, I direct your attention to our visitors who are with us in the anteroom, and they're back there because they are a group from Azerbaijan, and they have an interpreter with them, and it would get more loud in here than even we could stand it if they were to be up here in the room with us. They are part of a delegation that is here hosted by World Services of La Crosse. They will be spending a total of 3 weeks in Western Wisconsin learning about democracy and learning how local government in particular works with not-for-profit organizations or NGOs, non-governmental organizations, and trying to learn as much as they can to take back to their communities in Azerbaijan. They are hosted today by Deb Luchin, who is one of the staff people at World Services. And I would really appreciate it if they would stand as I introduce them and if you would welcome the group collectively when they are done. First, I don't see Lala. Is she back there? Lala Abashova is chair of the Young Talents Society in her community. Then we have Alibay Rahimov, who is the chairman of the Gara Girdli municipality in Azerbaijan. So he's a politician. I hope I'm looking at his face to see if he minded that I said that or if he cringed or not. Asaf Ahamadov is the regional coordinator for the Center for Elections Monitoring and Educating Democracy, which is an NGO. Fuad over there? He's hiding. Fuad Badalov is the director and trainer for the National NGO Forum in their resource and training center. And Yulivia Yalalava is a psychologist and a teacher involved in a youth organization in her community. And then I call him Big Bad Maharam Goyashuglo, is the chairman of his regional development resource and public union. And their interpreter is Garkmad. I don't know Garkmad's last name. I apologize. I would mutilate it anyway if I did. But I want to be sure that you meet them by their first names and know that they are spending an intense period of time in our country, in our community, learning as much as they can. So this is to say, behave, everybody. Let's make it a quick meeting so they can see it in its entirety. And I also want to thank Steve O'Malley and John Mettinger, who have played a very important part in some of the work that the delegation has already been doing in their first couple of weeks. They're here until Friday, and then we'll head home. So please join me in welcoming our friends from Azerbaijan.
Tara, I also want to point out that Linda Stone and our staff out at the Solid Waste Department, Jeff Gloyd and the other folks there, provided tours of some unique parts of our operation, including how best to hold elections as well as handling a solid waste. So that was very positive. Which are related, Sharon points out.
All right, so everybody be on your best behavior tonight. We have visitors. If it's okay with the board, I would like to skip the proclamation for just a moment and go down to the status report on XL Energy Plant because Mike Harrow's on a short time frame. So if Mike could come up and do his report. And by the way, you had the 2008 report put on your desk tonight, which is not Mike's fault, nor is it my fault. It's got to be Steve O'Malley's fault by default. So if you didn't have a chance to read it ahead of time of this meeting, that meant that you didn't get here more than 10 minutes before the meeting, and we apologize. But Mike didn't know until, like, last week that he was going to be here.
And we want to get an up-to-date report last minute. But thank you there for the comments. And like I said, we do have a report this year, and I'm going to summarize that in a few minutes here. I just want to introduce myself. My name is Mike Harrow. I'm the area manager for XL Energy, community service manager. work a lot with many of the county board members and staff. With me today are Tina Ball, our environmental expert out of Eau Claire, and Mark Peidel, our plant manager at our French Island plant. So what I'd like to do today would be just to give a little bit of background about the plant, talk about the highlights, and then open up for questions and answers at the end. Did everyone get a report? I'm sorry, I tried to catch everybody there. Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I'm getting old. I must have missed that role, John. Sorry about that. I apologize. This update began a few years ago, and in talking to Steve, we felt it was important to give the county board updates once a year, particularly as new members or board members are coming in. We thought it was important then also to give returning members an update on the progress over the last year. So the report on your table is our 2008 summary report for the French Island plant. A little bit of background, the plant is located on French Island. It has two main boilers. One is and those burn 50-50 combination of wood waste and RDF, which is refuse-derived fuel. Garbage trucks that come to your house once a week, they go to our plant and dump it off. We separate it into and separate it the burnables, usually plastics or light plastics, or plastics or light paper. We shred that. We store it and we burn it with wood waste. The wood waste is primarily railroad ties. There's a shredding operation outside of our plant. We also take wood waste from area sawmills. The plant runs, we also have two diesel-fueled combustion turbines at the plant. These are used during real hot days or real cold days. As the system peaks are starting to rise, you bring these higher cost units on. The plant runs Monday through Friday. Three shifts, and we shut it down on the weekends, and it employs 31 people here in La Crosse. This plant is a relatively small plant, compared to our other plants. It provides about 20% of the electricity for the city of La Crosse, about the equivalent of maybe 10,000 homes. But it has avoided the construction of five medium-sized landfills for La Crosse County in the number of years we've had this operation going. We do have a contract with the county that runs through 2023 to provide this service, to take the municipal garbage and separate it and make it into energy. The plant must meet very strict environmental regulations from both the EPA and the DNR. A couple of highlights for 2008. 2008 was a successful year at the plant. We are in complete compliance with all air quality, water quality, and solid waste permits in 2008. With one exception, we had a six-minute opacity exception, and that's noted in your in the papers in front of you. In 2008, we installed an activated carbon system on boiler number one. We had installed it on the other boiler the year before. This has further decreased the dioxin emissions from this plant. And if you look in your brochure there's some graphs that show pretty dramatic decreases after the environmental controls, the environmental project was done a few years ago at the plant. We're working with the DNR, and we've performed test burns to see if we can increase the allowable burn above 50% for RDF. Right now it has to be, by permit, a 50-50 burn rate. We think there are some advantages to burning more RDF versus wood, and we're exploring those options as we speak. We had a major turbine generator overhaul in 2008. Some days if you came in, there were parts all over the place on the floor. We completely redid that turbine generator, and it's operating very efficiently now. And I think the last time that one was overhauled was 9 years ago. They're usually done 7 to 10 years. We also completed some major projects in the RDF processing building. If you've been to this plant, when we do the tours, we start out in the generating plant, then we walk over to the RDF facility. It's a separate building, then we walk back to the plant. In 2008, we gave tours to nearly 700 people. We also implemented a new tour schedule. This is somewhat different. We implemented in 2009 here, where we're giving tours on the first Thursday of the month from Tannendale 3, which still allows access. What we're running into is we're getting a lot of requests for tours that were disrupting our maintenance schedules a little bit. You know, we'd have to tell the guys, you know, we'd call them and say, hey, we're going to tour. They have to clean up all the time. And we had other operations where we had to have manpower to give the tours for the bigger groups. So we're trying it this year to see how this works. Like I said, I think it's worked out pretty well so far to have a set time period when our plant guys and the public know when we're going to give tours. And to get a tour, they just have to call into the plant, and we'll line it up. I would encourage that for any new or existing board members. If you've never been to the plant, we'd be happy to show you the workings of that plant.
Mike, can you give the number that they would call?
Sure. I know Mark's number. The number's, it's in the brochure on page 9. It's Mark Peidel or Lisa Fisher. Their numbers are in there.
Okay. Brad? No,
oh, not quite.
Yet.
Almost done, no. Almost done. We had no major citizen complaints or large-scale negative media coverage in 2008, which I like. you know, in the past we've had, and we've reported this out to you, noise issues and different things like that, but things have run very well there recently. The plant is also recognized as a renewable energy plant in the state of Wisconsin. The state has been doing a lot of renewable legislation. We are part of that, not legislation, but a part of this board that got together to come up with a plan. And this plant here is one of the larger renewable plants in the state. Like I mentioned, to get a true appreciation of the plant, you really need to come out, and we'll show a video. We'll give everyone a walkthrough. It's about an hour tour. If we're not able to answer your questions tonight, we're able to come back at another time, either at the committee level or the full board. So at this point, like I said, I just want to condense everything down, and at this point we'd like to have a question and answers if there are any, and then I'll call up Mark and Tina as we need them.
Brad Paff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mike and Tina and everybody else for coming forward. I think this is helpful when you come forward every year to the full board. I just got two quick questions, and I think your brochure is wonderful. I wish I would have got here earlier and read the whole thing. You talked about how you're considering more RDF, refuse-derived fuel, versus wood. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because I also know that Xcel Energy is interested in further biomass, mm-hmm. which would be wood-based biomass, it's my understanding.
And RDF, I think, is classified as renewable sources too.
Can you kind of talk a little bit about where you see your fuel mix going in the future?
Okay.
Out there,
and maybe some of the advantages of that. And
right.
Tina, do you want to talk about that, or up here though, Tina?
Yeah. And then while you guys are getting ready, on page 6, you talk about quote all ash generated by the plant goes to the La Crosse County landfill for disposal. I'm not a chemist, but it's my understanding that you can use some ash for like concrete and cement and various things. Is this too toxic, or it doesn't have the correct chemical components in order to recycle and put into concrete and
okay.
things like that?
Well, I'm going to let Mark answer that because he's been doing a lot of work with that. But Tina, why don't you answer the first question? And
yeah, let me go backwards here. According to the contract, we can beneficially reuse a certain percentage of the ash rather than put it in the landfill. Is it 30%?
70%.
We have in the past pursued some of those projects, and it is viable ash for beneficial reuse. It just hasn't happened. The landfill has built, has recently, as you know, built its own cell for our ash, which is where it's going. But the prospect of beneficially reusing it is still there, and we have had some opportunities to do so. We just haven't, it just hasn't quite happened yet.
Presumably, there wouldn't be any reason we want more to the landfill, right? I mean, if you said we could take 100% of it and reuse it, I guess I'm also looking at yeah. Hank out there. Is there any reason why we would want a certain amount to come to the landfill?
Want me to take that?
Yeah.
Right now, we take 100% of our ash to the landfill,
mm-hmm.
and the contract states that we could take up to 70% away. It's a revenue stream right now for the landfill. And if we would take it away, that would be a loss of a revenue stream.
Okay.
We have been pursuing beneficial reuse, but that is, we've kind of got to the point where the economics don't work with it.
Okay.
Our ash is acceptable at any commercial landfill based on the annual and quarterly test results.
Okay. And then what?
I think the first question had to do with our RDF usage and our wood usage. Yeah. What we're doing right now, Wisconsin is the only state that forces a 50-50 blend with RDF to wood waste because of its air toxics rule, which was written in the 80s. We've been working with the DNR because of our new pollution controls at that plant, because of its performance. The DNR is actually doing a risk assessment for the plant. I think some of you may have known that from last year. But we've been working with them for a couple years for the ability to get that 50-50 percentage out of the permit so that we have fuel flexibility. There's some times that we can't get the wood waste that we would like to get, and meeting that 50-50, it hasn't been problematic, but it could be in the future. So we just wanted the flexibility to be able to burn more than 50% RDF if we had to.
What about environmentally?
Environmentally? Was that part of the question? Environmentally, the RDF has a slightly higher heat content. We call it BTU content, thermal content. So it does burn a little bit hotter than the wood waste. But having said that, those boilers are so well controlled right now with air flows and temperatures and all, and the back-end pollution controls, that from an environmental perspective, the emissions are probably not going to be too much different than they are right now.
And just a follow-up question on that. Are you considering, again, Wisconsin's moving forward with this renewable portfolio, and are you considering cellulosic, other types of cellulosic materials besides just wood to someday be put into your fuel mix?
We have a person out of our Madison office that has looked into some of that. We haven't really gone into that area yet because we're so familiar with the wood waste we've been burning. We've been burning it up north in Ashland since the late 70s and down here since the late 80s. That would kind of be a new thing for us, and we're not sure of the conditions in which we would need to burn it. And
however,
so I'm not saying no. I'm just saying we haven't dove into that head first at this point.
I have been told, though, that XL is considering in the Ashland plant moving more aggressive towards other cellulosic material.
Not necessarily. What they're looking at for that plant is to actually take wood waste and gasify the wood waste and burn the gas from the wood. So that's kind of a new arena for us as well.
Brad, that plant at the one boiler would replace coal. We'd have the opportunity to burn this gasified wood waste to replace coal, and then if that's done, or we're in the PSC right now trying to get the permits for that, but if that's done, that'd be the largest renewable plant in the Midwest up in Ashland. So,
Dan Bina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of questions. If you're going to expand the burning of garbage, which I assumed you may do, is our emissions going to handle any more garbage? And I'm not sure what you would increase there, but it sounded from your statement, it looked like you might expand the scope of what you burn there.
Yeah, well, I guess what we're looking at is, right now we're burning 50% wood and 50% RDF. We're looking at the potential to burn maybe 70% RDF, 30% wood. We just completed in early May test burns of that mixture, of that blend. We don't have those results back yet, but we tested at different loads and different RDF percentages to see exactly, to answer your question, to see what it's going to do to our emissions. We anticipate that it's actually potentially going to help our emissions because of the better heat content of the RDF, but, you know, we don't know. We should have those results, well, 60 days from early May, so.
Okay, and, you know, there are plants who are working with Alliance Energy out of Cassville. Mm-hmm. They were going to put more burnable material through their processing plant, but they got turned down by the Public Service Commission, so I'm not sure where that's going to go. But the other thing I would be interested in, you don't want to take too much ash away from the county, I suppose, and put it into another process, but, you know, our group, too, works with economic development like our county does here. It would be nice to start a new business making concrete and using your ash for or something that you can make concrete. We could start a new business. In order to get people employed in this country, we have to start a new business because the old businesses exported their whole machinery overseas, and that would be a good place to start economic development right there. But we'd have to negotiate something with the county if you're going to use all your ash for concrete.
Jill Billings.
Thank you. I've heard rumblings and questions from people in the community about plastics. A couple months ago, there was a letter to the editor outlining from some people who are involved in that group their concerns. What would, if plastics were recycled, as we do glass and newspaper and other things in our community, how would it affect Xcel? Would there be enough RDF? And I know those plastics help. My understanding is that it helps a hotter burn, a better burn. But if plastics were recycled in recycling containers, how would that affect Xcel? And then also, if we had a recycling program in the county, how would that affect the county?
I guess from the plant standpoint, as far as how we burn, it would not affect us much at all. There is high BTU in the plastics, which, so in a way, we might might control our combustion a little better because that gives you high BTU and very good combustion. From the county standpoint, I don't know if Hank would want to come up and answer that question. I really can't answer what it would affect the county's tonnage to us. I do know that they've met the 73,000 ton since we put in the new pollution control equipment in 2001 and have been above that by 3,000-4,000 ton.
So from your standpoint, it seems like there would be enough RDF if that plastic was taken out and recycled.
I'd have to let the county answer that because I don't know how much they would remove. I don't know how much would be removed.
We'll see if Hank has anything to add.
And I think Hank could answer that better than I can.
Thank you.
Hank, you heard the question, I assume.
Yes.
Now that you've been on the job for over a month, we want all the answers.
I knew this question would come up because I saw some of the articles in the newspaper, so I've been talking to some people on a national basis. The plastics that are typically recycled out of the municipal solid waste stream amount to less than 1% of the tonnage that we'll see. So you won't see a large impact to Xcel if we were to have a very successful recycling program. I also talked to some of our local haulers. They're already doing this with a number of communities on a voluntary basis. And in my discussions, I found out two important things. The first one is obviously La Crosse County is not the responsible unit for recycling. We don't have that authority. Local communities do. So we cannot impose a recycling program on these communities to say, take your plastics out, nor are we in a position to say, keep your plastics in. Yes, we would take some energy value away, but if, as a consensus, the society said we would prefer to do this in this community and pay that price, great, let's do that. I think we can do both.
Thank you. Jay Johnson.
Don't run away. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a similar question relating to if you're going to increase the ratio of RDF, and obviously I've only had a chance to briefly look through this report, but it seems to indicate that waste has only been diverted due to plant-based reasons like an explosion, fires. It doesn't look as if you're diverting excess waste that you don't have the capacity to burn. So how would you get that additional RDF to bump you up to 70%?
Okay, we have diverted this past year and the year before when we hit the contract levels for monthly burn. There's a lot of times we choose not to because when we hit those monthly levels, we'll continue to take the waste because the equipment is running good and we're everything is going smoothly. If we hit those contract levels and we're having some problems, it gives us an opportunity to shut down and fix those problems. And I think in this report it states that we did hit Appendix J three times in 2008 and diverted part of that waste that had been diverted. When we talk about going to 70% or 100% RDF, I don't see our numbers changing unless the county would bring us more municipal solid waste. I see it giving the plant the chance to burn and be more flexible in how we burn our waste. We're the only large waste combustor in the nation that is held to a 50% limit, and it's through a DNR, Wisconsin DNR permit. Every other, all the other waste energy plants have, they do burn 100% with the same type of pollution control equipment.
I just have a follow-up question then. Maybe I'm making a bad assumption, because I'm assuming that you're going to try to keep your BTUs at the same level and just increase the proportion of waste. Are you saying you're going to generate less electricity putting in less wood?
No. If for instance, if we would run out of the RDF at midnight or 1 o'clock, we would go over to 100% wood waste, or we would stay at a 50-50% ratio, because that seems to work very well with our boilers. But if we had one boiler down and we're doing maintenance on it, we could go up to like 70% and continue to meet our contract. And then when that boiler came back online, I'd go back. I think we'd see us burn more wood waste on an annual basis, but probably the same amount of RDF that we're burning now.
John Menninger.
Well, I just have a quick question. I'm not sure who answers it. When you guys take your ash to our landfill, does it become our ash then, because you have to pay to store it there? You deliver it, then it becomes ours. We charge you. And then my question is then if we got it all there and they're not recycling any of this, we decide to recycle it, do then we make money selling it? Is it our money? I'm just curious, whose ash is it, and if you had a reuse for it that developed?
So, in other words, get it to the landfill, and once we've got it, we could turn around and resell it.
Yeah, they give us money to take it, and then we sell it and get rid of it.
True capitalist, John.
Well, I don't know. Whose ash is that? Is that our ash?
I believe it is your ash.
So we could just...
Somebody wasn't going to let that go.
I saw that one coming.
So that's our ash, and then even though now we could take it away from the landfill and resell it if we had the market was there.
I would have to look back into the contract, but I think it is once we pay to have it disposed there, they have a separate cell for our ash. So.
Any other questions? All right. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Let's go back real quick and take care of the proclamation.
Proclamation, June 2009, Parks and Natural Resources Month. Whereas the county park system and our natural resources are an integral part of the La Crosse County community, and whereas quality of our parks and natural resources provides safe and healthy places for residents and visitors to recreate and enjoy, and whereas residents and visitors are encouraged to educate themselves and adopt responsible lifestyles that preserve the beauty and value of our parks and natural resources, and whereas La Crosse County employees from the Facilities Department and the Department of Land Conservation serve to educate, protect, maintain, and enhance the quality of our parks and natural resources, now therefore be it resolved, La Crosse County Board does hereby proclaim the month of June 2009 as the La Crosse County Parks and Natural Resources Month, and urges all residents to join in recognizing the valuable contribution made by county employees dedicated to the welfare of our parks and natural resources for the benefit of our residents and visitors of La Crosse County.
Moved by Ann Fisher, seconded by Margaret Wood. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. That gets us to the Cooley Cap Report and Grace Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for a few minutes on your busy agenda to talk about Cooley Cap. In front of you, there's a blue sheet which gives you an overview of what we did at Cooley Cap in La Crosse County in 2008. The front page is all about housing. We're very involved in a number of housing activities, and if any of your constituents need help with housing, they should definitely give Cooley Cap a call. On the back, we get into employment and training and community services programs, which I'm not going to read through. I'll just highlight at the bottom that our current board members include Ann Fisher and Jill Billings, who do a wonderful job on the Cooley Cap board. We're raising about almost $2.4 million and employ 10 residents of La Crosse County. So I want to thank you for your support, especially that you have wonderful human services staff and wonderful staff in your Department of Planning, or Planning Department, I guess, who we work with a lot and think are great. I want to mention in the remainder of my time what we're going to be doing with the stimulus monies. This is the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act era funds. We haven't received any money yet. We know that at the state level, they're busily working to get these dollars to flow into the area. But I just want to let you know, in case any of your constituents have needs, that we're going to have some funds that will be able to help families with housing, transportation, training, dental care, food, foreclosure assistance, education, employment, and other crisis and emergency services. We were also funded to run a summer youth program in a couple of the counties through the Workforce Development Board. Home weatherization is going to have a dramatic increase, and we're going to be able to weatherize another 500 homes over the next, well, it used to be 2 years. It's getting into a year and a half now where we'll get to do many additional units. There's a new funding source, Homelessness Prevention and Rapid Rehousing Program, the HPRP, we prefer to call it. And we're submitting an application for over $900,000 for a multi-county, multi-agency application, and that money will come in to help primarily folks with things like rental assistance, utility assistance, housing counseling. And then finally, we're going to get some food program assistance. You may not know that Cooley CAP handles the federal TFAP, Temporary Assistance to, I'm sorry, it's the Federal Food Program, used to be called Commodities. And we pass some of that money through, or food through, to Salvation Army and Wafer, and then also operate in rural counties some of our own food pantries. So we're always glad to see additional resources becoming available for food assistance. Cooley CAP works with about 461 other businesses every year. These are the vendors that we purchase products from and issue checks to for services and products. And so a lot of that ERA money is going to come through Cooley CAP, but then also go right into the local economy, helping people and into local businesses. So we're happy about that. I want to mention one last thing. We've formed a Cooley Community Land Trust, which we're very excited about, under our Cooley Housing Development Corporation, which is affiliated with Cooley CAP. And we have a lot of new housing development activities, especially in La Crosse County, that I could go into if you're interested, or I'd be glad to talk one-on-one with anyone that's interested. We've also handled flood funding on behalf of the county to help deal with the terrible floods over the last 2 years, and we've been glad to do that. And so that would cover the main things I wanted to mention. One last thing, sorry. We've seen a dramatic increase in the people needing help in our area. Started last fall. You're all aware of this. Our annual number of people that we served used to be around 20, 25,000. We're up to 38,000 now, and about 15,000 families. So we're not limited to very low-income people. We also serve moderate-income people, but we're seeing the layoffs in jobs, foreclosures on homes, a new group of people coming into Cooley CAP for assistance. And so given that, we're most anxious for those federal dollars to arrive so we can help some of these families who are basically calling us every day.
Questions for Grace. Tara Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Grace, will you just say one more sentence or two about the dental money that you're getting through the Recovery Act, and what that will be used for and how it will be distributed?
Well, this is going to actually sound a little bit awful, but out of one of the allocations we received, we're going to be able to help people with the cost of dental extractions so that we can help them get their teeth pulled. There isn't enough money for extensive dental work, but at least we can get those abscesses and those infected teeth pulled.
And is that in all counties that you serve?
Yes, although we're primarily doing this linked with the St. Clair Mission and the dentists that they work with.
I just want to make sure you knew that they had a pot of money. It shrinks, and then they get some contributions to do those medically necessary extractions.
Right.
Yep. Okay,
right.
Thank you.
And the money's going to dentists that already help the St. Clair Mission, and so we're linking that all together. Yeah, thanks.
Ann Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say, being a member of the board, what a wonderful job this agency does. And I think, you know, we really barely touch all the wonderful things that they do, and I can't imagine where we would be if they were not around. I mean, Health and Human Services would be even in, you know, have a lot more demand on them. They really are a super agency. Thank you again.
Don Bina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you do any financial planning for families who are having financial problems? Do you get involved in that part of it?
Many of the programs have that aspect to them, where we might have a housing program with case managers, and part of the work they do in that housing program is financial management assistance, helping people develop a budget, learn how to manage their finances and stay out of trouble.
Okay, so you do some of that.
In existing programs.
The reason why I asked is that about a week and a half ago, I got a call from a guy from California that wanted to help me with my finances if I needed help. And I said, who are you? And they said, they're a nonprofit organization from California.
Mm.
And I said, let me do some checking, and you're the first one I checked with. Mm-hmm. He was going to call me back. And he wants a list of names. And I said, if I do that, I'd rather do it local than from California.
Right.
But they're nonprofit, so I don't know what the fee would be, but I just was asking whether you did it or not.
The credit counseling organization in La Crosse.
They would be the ones to call.
Yeah.
Right.
That's
okay. Where you should start. Is
great
with
service.
And I think, does University Extension still do some of that, too?
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be the other resource available. Mm-hmm. Margaret Wood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Grace, I just want to say this was just a wonderful narrative on each page.
Oh, thank you.
And I certainly hope you will thank John Young for his multiple years of service.
Mm-hmm.
With the economy the way it is, though, and our teenagers unable to secure their usual part-time summer jobs, has there been any impetus or any initiative, you talked about a little bit of education in here, to maybe, you know, help the school districts get the kids and actually, you know, help have them go to school for the summer as opposed to work? I see Fred Cush is in here too. I would think he'd be interested in that, but
not to my knowledge. We haven't done anything about having kids go to school in the summer. The program I was very happy to see come back was the Summer Youth Employment Program. So we've been able to get 64 youth into jobs for this summer, which is fabulous. And really, none of those kids would have employment without the Summer Youth Program. Those of you who have been around a long time know that used to be a couple hundred kids back in the heyday of former employment training programs, and I was very sad to see that go. So at least we have 64 back to work, and they'll have about a 7 to 8 week experience. Some of them will be crew leaders. I'm sure there are sites at the county that we're utilizing. Sorry.
Any other questions? All right. Grace,
thank you
very much. Okay, that gets us to the chair's report. And there's just one item under there that we have, and that is travel authorizations, expense statements, and required vehicle insurance. And the reason that is on there is that the finance department pointed out to us that we have a very tight ship that we run with all our departments. We make everybody follow the rules right to the letter, except for one group is a little sloppy, and that would happen to be you folks. And so they did point out that the person who seems to be the best at it is Sharon Hampson, and so we recruited her to teach the rest of us how to do this correctly. So thank you, Sharon. Our little overachiever here.
This is one of those instances where everyone else took a step back and I was standing there going, huh? All right. I've always wanted to stand up here and present something. But not something as boring as travel reimbursement. Oh, my God. I was thinking something controversial. No.
Travel reimbursement forum.
So what is your T-shirt being?
Oh, Joan of Arc was not Noah's wife. Just not every woman is defined by a man. You wouldn't get it. We'll talk later.
Okay, next item on the agenda.
I'm kind of developing a track record, though, for boring assignments. I met David Callender, who's a legislative guy for WCA, and we were at a legislative gathering, and I get all excited about legislative stuff, and I volunteered to be on a committee. So I get this letter in the mail from David Callender, and I'm on the Records Retention Policy Committee.
I'm sure you'll figure out a way to make that controversial, though, Sharon.
Oh, I'm working on it. Yeah. Now I'm Bill.
So tell us about travel authorizations.
Okay,
Sharon.
All right.
Just for the heck of it.
So now I'm being punished for filling out forms, right? So the basic deal is you've got the pertinent parts of the code there, which are good bedtime reading, and three forms. And the first one is the request to attend, and that's the top one. And that can be filled out by you or by Margaret or by Linda Stone. So you can call in and say, Margaret, I want to go to blah, 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 blah. Can you ask Steve if it's okay?
One of the more common problems we run into is people come to us after the fact and say, right, I want reimbursement, but they never filled out the form first.
So you ask to go. I mean, it's kind of, you think about it, it's kind of simple. So there's an authorizing party, and for us, is the county board chair. Linda Stone and Dolores and I were talking, maybe if Steve Doyle isn't available, then the first vice chair or the second vice chair would be able to sign those two. Maureen?
That's actually always been the case.
Okay.
They can.
Got a question already.
Okay.
If
sure.
It's something that Steve says, oh, everybody can go to this, do you still need to make a request, or do you assume that you've got that permission and you don't fill out that form?
Let me take that one. Sometimes people aren't aware. For example, LADCO will have a thing and people don't necessarily know about it, so I'll point out saying, yes, you can go if you would like, but you still do need to call the chair's office so we know how many people are going and so that we can get the list to the entity. A lot of times they need to know that we've got people coming. So don't call, for example, using LADCO, don't call LADCO and say, I'm going to come, put me on the list. Call Margaret, and she will take care of that. And she will help you fill out the form.
Or do it for you.
Or do it for you.
So the next issue is about vehicles. And I was surprised to find out I'm the only person who uses a rental car to go on trips around the state. But apparently that's in the code. It's all in that lovely purple document. The deal about rental vehicles is you can rent a vehicle through Enterprise, and there again, Margaret Norden will organize. You just call her up. I want to go to this thing. Can you get me a car? And she'll call Enterprise, and there you are. And that costs $36.60 a day. So what's technically in here, in the code, is that if you don't use a rental car and you put in a mileage claim for more than $36.60 in a day, you're only supposed to get $36.60. Now, I'm not sure that's being enforced.
Plus gas.
Right, plus the gas that goes in the rental car.
Actually, when Dolores catches it, that's the number she puts in. So
okay.
People aren't getting the checks that they expected, and I assume they figured out that that's why it is. And if you, we're not going to force you to take a rental car if you don't want to. We're only going to pay you the equivalent of the rental car. If you want to use your own car and get paid at the rental car rate, that's fine, not a problem. But our ordinance says the rate that we can pay you is whatever the rental car would be, unless your car would be a cheaper deal. And occasionally it does work out that it makes more sense. It has to do with the length of time and the mileage,
right,
that it, and they figure it out, and they tell us this way is better or that way is better.
So if you go somewhere close by for 3 days, it's often more cost-effective to take your own car.
Yeah.
But if you're going across the state for 1 day, then a rental car is cheaper. So there's a way to figure that out. Also, in the ordinance, it says something about pooled transportation whenever possible. So these are all just what we really need to do is just tighten up the way we're doing it. Okay, and then there's the issue of insurance. And even if you're using your private vehicle and not claiming mileage reimbursement from the county, you still have to have a certificate of insurance.
Wait, we just changed. On file. We just got a clarification from Bill, and he's said that we don't need to on that. That was just as of
well, thanks
like
for
today
telling
or yesterday,
me.
I think.
All right, I can get rid of that part.
If you use your own car and you claim mileage, we need the insurance certificate.
All right, good.
If you don't claim mileage, that's fine. But if you're going to get money from us, whether it's a rental vehicle or your own vehicle, we need that certificate.
Okay. Government discounts is another thing. And often that's arranged for us, like at WCA, you get the government rate at a hotel. But we're supposed to ask for that and try to get that rate.
And if you go through Margaret, she will take care of that for you.
Yep.
The bottom line here is the easiest thing for you to do is to call Margaret ahead of time and say, do this for me. She will take care of everything for you, and you'll have gotten it correct. Well, that could be it. Audrey?
Back to the rental car and the insurance issue. If you use a rental car and are unfortunate enough to have some damage done to it, you wouldn't do it yourself, of course, but anyway, then is it claimed under your personal insurance? I mean, and if you take a rental car, do you need to provide your own personal insurance?
Bill?
By virtue of the code, it says all vehicle rental rates include collision and liability insurance, so it's built into the rental rate.
So that includes all damage to the vehicle?
So if
collision
somebody
has
an accident, will their insurance pay it or will Enterprise's insurance pay it?
It's my understanding that Enterprise will have coverage as a result of our arrangement with them.
So that's included?
Because
that's included.
In the 36.
Because just personally rent a car from Enterprise, there is a daily fee if you want insurance. And what about the deductible?
I don't know offhand what if there's a deductible on that.
I just rented a car recently, that's why it's on my mind, you know, and they charge different rates based on the amount of deductible that you opt to select.
I'll ask Bill or Gary to check into that and just get back to us.
Thank you.
Okay. Don?
A couple of things now. I went on an 8-day vacation. I rented a car in Arizona. I was required to show my insurance when I picked up the car. It was on my name, and I'm assuming I'm required to have a certain level of insurance through the county, which I do have, and it's a higher rate than I normally carry. I'm assuming that it will fall back on me if nobody else pays, because my insurance is at that level. In that case, you might as well drop my insurance. I could save myself $50 or $70 a month, because I'm required to have a higher rate because I use my own car.
It's our expectation that if you're using the car through Enterprise, this is not on your personal insurance. That's part of our rental agreement.
Then
you're paying
for the insurance.
But our requirements for producing that certificate of insurance has certain levels on it. So
right.
Bill and Gary, if you could look into that. See, now the problem would be if you sometimes use your own car and sometimes use Enterprise, you better have that higher rate.
Mm-hmm. You're right. I agree. Well, the other thing is, you know, I've been on the board for a couple of years, and this is the first month I've ever got any paperwork back from the county telling me whether I was rejected or accepted when I turned my sheets in. And I turned my sheets in monthly or bimonthly for sure. And I never get anything back. You said how good a job we're doing, but how do I tell as a supervisor whether I'm approved or not? You never sent me an approval slip back until right here. This is the first one I ever got.
What happens when you turn them in is they go from Margaret to finance department, and Dolores Kenyon looks at them, and she is the gatekeeper. She's the one who, if you get less than you thought you were getting, she's the one who caught it. She sends them to me with a note saying no prior approval or higher than our rate or something like that. And she's God. I just sign whatever she says because she knows the rules. So if you get less, then it would be incumbent upon you to call and say, wait a minute, what happened?
I don't figure my rates. I let you guys figure the rates. And I usually accept what you take because I never get any paperwork back from it until now. Now I can start figuring whether I'm getting my check or not, and now I can start complaining about rejection if you reject.
Yeah, and I don't know what Dolores does if people do get any explanation or what. All I know is I.
Okay. Yeah. Well. Okay. Anyhow, if you continue to send back the sheet so I know what I get approved for and not, I really don't have any problem. But I have no way of figuring my check whether it's right or not at the end of the month because.
But if people follow the rules as Sharon is mentioning, then you will know how much you should be getting, and if that number is different from the actual check you get, then you should ask the question. We don't want to create extra paperwork and kill more trees to accomplish this. The other thing that's really important for me to mention is what I normally will approve and will not approve. If we're not a member of an organization, I won't approve that normally. I mean, you'd have to have a pretty good reason for the county to pay that. Some people do go to some things that we don't belong to. In fact, a certain person got himself elected head of an organization, Don, that we didn't belong to your credit. But if the county doesn't belong and your committee didn't see fit to have the county join, that tells me that it would not be appropriate for me to approve those.
If you're talking about RC&D, we do pay a $100 fee for that. It's the Driftless area that is an offshoot of the RC&D that we don't need a fee for. And if you don't pay, I'll get the money from the organization. But I never got a receipt back showing.
And that is a really good point. If you can go to something and have somebody else pay, like the organization will pay for you to go, that's even our first choice.
That's what I usually do.
We like that.
You're right.
Jill.
Thank you. If a department head asks you to go to something and it's coming out of their budget, do we still need to go through this process?
Everything is supposed to be coordinated through the chair's office.
Thank you.
Yes. Anybody else? Sharon, did you have anything?
Terry, you had your hand up. You did. Oh, you were waving. Okay. All right, just a couple other things. The third page in your packet of forms is only for meals. And I didn't know this. This is the part I was screwing up. But meals reimbursement is separate from other reimbursements, and that's because of IRS rules. It's taxable income, and that has to go through payroll. So you put your meals on this form, and you put everything else on that form. So that'd be registration fee, hotel, car,
Linda wants
car,
to add
gas.
To that.
You know, it's no wonder this is hard to do.
Joe?
I just hope the Azerbaijani people can get a full transcript of this.
I'm sorry. All right, just a couple other things. If there's a hotel cancellation fee, like if you're going to something and then you don't go and there's a fee, that's going to be decided on a case-by-case basis whether you get reimbursed. So if your reason for not going is something like an illness or a death in the family, then the county will probably pay that fee. If you just decided you weren't going to go, then you're probably going to have to pay it. Now, the other thing we started talking about when we looked at this ordinance, because the ordinances, there's several places. You only got a little bit of what's in here. We're thinking maybe we need to tighten up how we do this. So possible changes we could make to the ordinances are things like, should we require receipts for everything or refuse payment? And the reason I'm good at bringing receipts is because I worked in public schools, and the only way you would ever get reimbursed in the public schools is if you had the receipt and then you got to the exact cent that you spent. So we could reword the wording in there, like meal reimbursement up to X number of dollars for breakfast, but you don't automatically get the top amount. So that's a change we could make. We could make a change where if you miss the deadline for a registration discount, then you have to pay the excess yourself. And then the other thing that we could take out of there is the phrase at the discretion of department heads. That would mean that every department in the county would handle their travel reimbursement the same. Right, in theory. So apparently the sheriff's department handles theirs completely differently than everybody else. And that's just accepted because he's the sheriff. So, I mean, I don't know if there's any interest in looking at the code or if everyone else finds it as absolutely deadly boring as I do.
Well, Sharon, you're on the executive committee. If you'd like that on the agenda, we can certainly talk about it.
Okay.
Tara?
Two things. I just want to thank Supervisor Hampson for bringing to life the personnel administrative rules around reimbursement. And just ask Gary or Steve or somebody, what's the total amount that the county board in a year spends on
these expenses? It's so little.
It's actually more than you would have thought. Because I ask them for that number on about a yearly basis, and they give it to me. While he's looking that up, Jerry Sobranek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Last Friday's ITBIC meeting, we went through the same thing. There were some changes coming down from the IRS that were passed under the WCA. The WCA passed down to us. There's been some increases, like in meals and things like that, but it's just a lot like this, and it might be a good idea to get the latest WCA ruling on that the information they got from Internal Revenue.
Okay. Gary, maybe if you want to follow up on that.
Okay, for calendar year 2007, the county board spent on mileage $10,187, on training $4,250, and on meals and lodging $5,711. And I just as one additional comment, with all due respect to your instructor, she's right. There are certain categories within the ordinance that allow the department head to allow certain expenditures. Overall, the Sheriff's Department does follow the county procedures, but again, there are certain categories where it is up to the department head, but even when the department head allows for an exception, so to speak, it is, I think, within reason.
I have one concluding comment. Tara Johnson and I spent about an hour and a half, almost 2 hours, explaining to the Azerbaijan delegation the important work that this body does.
Oh, my God.
And now we have spent about 20 minutes
destroying
that. So that's
and will somebody else please learn how to fill out the form so I don't have to come up here again? I want you up here, not me.
Okay, the final word again is, well, first of all, yes, sir. Thank you, Sharon. Yes, the final word is, talk to Margaret ahead of time, and you will have no problems. Okay, keeping in the arena of exciting reports, Bill Shepard is going to talk about approving and correcting minutes procedure. So hold on to your seats.
Boy, what an act to follow that. That is. The reason that we bring this to you is Linda Stone and I, with the help of Barb from IT, have been working on trying to really correct an issue with our minutes on the web. And this was brought to my attention by Steve, and I think it came as a result of hiring Margaret to take over from Cheryl and looking back at something we did a long time ago. And the issue really is when we put the minutes on the web, we never changed them, even if corrections were made. And we would maintain on those minutes this disclaimer about the minutes may be amending, corrected, or changed at the next meeting. So Steve pointed out correctly so that if you really wanted to find out what we did in a meeting, you needed to look at that set of minutes plus the next one or the one following that, and really that isn't good service to our public. They should be able to look at one set of minutes, determine what happened in that meeting, and that would be it. So we took on that task, and it got a little bit more complicated than we thought, but the green sheet on your desk was a a part of a training session that we had with the recorders. We've talked to all your recorders that do minutes for the various committees and special committees and so forth. And we thought that we better tell you about a few of these things so that you don't revolt when you see the minutes look a little different than the way they did before. The main thing that we tried to change was showing on the web when minutes were approved. So just to give you a quick example, if this month in June, if you're approving your May meetings minutes, the recorder will change the words on the bottom to say approved. If you correct those minutes, she will make the correction in the minutes of that meeting. Robert, and of course all of you know that we follow Robert's rules when we don't have a county board rule to change it. And Robert's rules basically says that, you know, most of the time correction of minutes or approval of minutes are such a mundane kind of activity. Most of the time it's unanimously approved. You don't need to go through a formal motion and second and show the vote in those kinds of activities. All that we need to do is show that the minutes were approved or minutes were approved as corrected. And so they won't be, if you do this unanimously, they won't be showing a motion and a vote on that motion. So that's one of the main changes. But they will go back and make the corrections or the change that you ask for in the minutes being approved. So that really is the main change that you will see as your recorders try to follow our new rules. But this is kind of a summary of what we told them. So the one exception to that general rule we won't show a motion is if there's a difference of opinion. Somebody objects to a correction, and there appears not to be unanimous consent to making that correction, then it might be advisable to show, have a motion and take a vote. But if somebody makes a correction, the committee unanimously agrees with that correction, we won't show that in a formal way. So are there any questions about that?
Questions for Bill? Jim Burns?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Bill, I have a question regarding the website then. When will the minutes be posted on the website?
Yeah, thanks, Jim. Just to back up, and I'll get to your question, but counties vary in when they put minutes. Some don't do it at all, and others wait until they're approved. We've chosen to put them up immediately, and we've tried to tell our recorders to do it, I think, within a week. Is that kind of the unofficial? We encourage them to do it, you know, relatively quick, because our feeling is that the public needs to know what happened in a meeting, to know whether they should contact their supervisor or come to the next meeting and raise an issue. We have those public comment sessions. So we try to do it, you know, as quickly as recorders can get them out there. And then following the approval, hopefully they will make those changes, and you will actually start to see on the minutes, you know, taking off the disclaimer and having approved on the bottom or approved as corrected. And we won't tell you exactly how that happens with IT, because it's more complicated and you really don't need to know how they're going to do it. But we've worked with IT, and there's a very simple solution, and the recorders now know how to do that.
So the minutes get approved, they get posted on the meeting happens, the minutes get posted on the website within
hopefully a week or whatever.
Yeah. And then at the next month's committee meeting, there's a change, there's an amendment to the minutes. Then the minutes that were posted on the website will be taken off, they'll change and put back on? Is that what's going to happen?
Correct.
Okay.
Basically, they. You really want to know all this stuff?
No, I don't need to know. I just need to.
Yeah, we've simplified how the recorders do that, and the new minutes will be on there in place of the old ones.
Okay, thank you. And then my other question is: there's a number of times when I've wanted to go back and review what was said at the meetings, And I know we have transcripts of the, of these meetings, of the policy meeting and the planning meeting and the regular meeting, but is there any way we can get electronic recordings of the committee meetings, at least the standing committee meetings, and have that technology available to the public, available to us as county supervisors? Because there's a number of times when I wanted to go back and after reading the minutes, I wanted to discern what exactly was said, and it's not necessarily in the minutes. So I guess my request is there a way we, because we tape record all the standing committee meetings, correct?
Correct. Margaret has a dictaphone.
Yep, a dictaphone. So is there any way we can, like with these meetings, is there any way we can put those committee minutes, post them for the public, so we have those for their archive and we have those for public record?
I don't know, Jim. I mean, basically, you have to remember that committee minutes are not transcripts of what takes place. The open meetings law is the thing, the main thing that we comply with, and that really only requires that the motions, the roll call votes, and what the actual vote is. Now, we do, and the recorders do include other detail so that you can have some flavor of what it is, but we don't have a transcript of each minute, meeting, and mm-hmm. and that gets into where's Sharon, records retention. You'll get into how long we have to save those kinds of things. I would suggest to you that minutes for committee meetings should be in the written form as posted on the web, and that's really, really, you know, the technology that we have right now. Could we do what we do here and videotape? I suppose. How much do you want to pay for all the staff time and all of the equipment?
Yeah, I'm not asking for anything that would be more expensive or call it a higher expense, because I guess we already have the tape of the meeting. So that's already done. It's not too difficult to have that. And I guess...
She doesn't save that, though, for forever.
I know, and that's my I guess that's why I'm asking, is there any way we could save that information and...
You would have to commit to creating five times the volume, actually six with the executive committee. You would have to create a whole archive system to maintain tapes. We already have to do that for county board meetings because we film them, and we have to require to save those. You would drastically increase the volume when none of the committees have final action anyway. The fact that the recording is only used for the purpose of the minutes taking, we don't have to retain that. Once the minutes are adopted, it makes it much simpler.
Okay.
The amount of archives we would have to keep would be a significant volume.
That's fine. I just thought, you know, it's anytime we can increase the public access to us, the elected officials, I think that's a good thing. And I just, full disclosure and full transparency, they're all good things. And maybe it's technically not efficient right now to do, but I hope someday in the future we do this. I know that the public property or the Planning Resource and Development Committee have complete transcripts of all their meetings, and I'm not asking for complete transcripts. I just thought it'd be nice just to have a recording if we already have it, but maybe in the future we can do that.
Joe Veenstra.
I'm trying to make this longer than it needs to be, but I think that Mr. Burns' hope is probably what the future will be. There's no reason why these meetings can't be digitally recorded. I have a digital recorder of my own that holds 2 gigabytes of information, can be dumped in about 30 seconds onto a computer, and then redumped into a minute format in a server that would be very easy for the public to access. And whether we need to do that now is up to debate, but I think it's easy to do and likely to happen eventually.
I think the point is well taken. Technology is going to solve that issue. Tom Rauch.
Just to be clear for the record, PR&D does not have all of its minutes recorded verbatim. The committee meeting for PR&D is just exactly like the other committees, and you get the minutes from that in the same fashion. PR&D's public hearing in the evening is mandated by state statute to be a public hearing, and that must be recorded. Very, very different from the committee meetings. Thank you.
Maureen Friedland.
Yes, I have on occasion, I think twice, gone to Cheryl when she was still your secretary and asked her for a tape to listen to it. and found it helpful. I can't even remember why, but she has made those available in the past.
What I think I'll do is ask the executive committee to deal with this issue and look at what we want for policies in that regard. So maybe we'll make Sharon the subcommittee chair of that or something. All right. John Menninger.
If the executive committee adopts a policy, will it come back to the...
Absolutely.
I'm for good government as much as anybody else, but I'll tell you, the more information you gather, the more trouble you're going to get yourself into. I don't think at City Hall, I don't think they even record common council meetings on the final night. I don't think they do. They never did.
Man, I'm biting my tongue here. This is a tough one.
So well, go ahead. I don't care.
Oh, you're not on there anymore. But Andrea has her hand up, and she is on the city council.
Well, I think the council president can answer that, but we did have a resolution that we approved last month to record the committee of the whole meetings, the common council meetings, and the public works and city planning. So that has started this month. So thank you.
You know, as the chair, I thought I really had my hand on the pulse of this board, and I thought, you know, when we get to item 2.6, that's going to have a lot of discussion, and we'll just whiz right to there. Man, I missed it tonight. Is there a full moon or something? There's got to be. Is there? Yeah. All right. So can we move on to the next item? County Administrator Report, Steve O'Malley.
Yes, included in your packet is a draft resolution that was considered by the Executive Committee at a special meeting at 5:30, and I will briefly describe it and then call on Jim Spropoulos to step up, and of course if the chair wants to highlight anything additional. At your last meeting, you considered and a majority of the board approved the concept of dealing with the garage floor, but we did not receive the two-thirds vote. So again, working with the board chair, we felt that it seemed that some of the objection was around the concept of phasing, and that possibly phasing this idea to first of all deal with the asbestos and the false ceiling and the other mechanisms that are there that are actually dealing with the possibility of the asbestos becoming airborne, that if we dealt with that in one phase, 1A and B, including the engineering work, that this would be able to accomplish and possibly receive the two-thirds vote that was necessary, and then provide enough engineering to come back with a detailed recommendation on what to do versus full replacement or just shoring up, and to separate it into two phases that this might be accomplished. Probably what's appropriate is to actually have a motion on this and then allow staff to walk you through our thought process.
And that motion would normally be done by Tara, but since she's out of the room, our second vice chair, Tom, can you get it on the floor? And I think you can skip most of those whereases.
Okay. Item 2-6, the Honorable Members of La Crosse County Board of Visitors regarding authorization to proceed with Phase 1 to include site preparation and asbestos removal in a portion of the southeast end of the administrative center. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 whereases. The seventh one following, I'll do the sixth one. The facility director recommends that the county board declare that the preparation of the site for further inspection be an emergency and an authority be granted to hire Vantage Architects under its existing contract with La Crosse County to determine a scope of work for a contractor or contractors to open the area beneath the floor for inspection. That would be phase 1A. And to hire an environmental firm to develop a scope of work for the environmental remediation and perform testing, that would be phase 1B. And whereas following the preparation of the scope of work for phases 1A, 1B, the facilities director recommends that we hire contractors to perform the work in the affected areas, including the contaminated ceiling, fireproofing, and pipe fittings. Note the asbestos is not just around the HVAC system. And whereas after completion of the site preparation work in phase one, further engineering, architectural inspections and studies may be undertaken to determine whether the garage floor should be repaired and shored up or replaced in phase two of the project. Now, therefore, be it resolved, La Crosse County Board does hereby declare that the site preparation of the garage floor located in a portion of the southeast end of the Administrative Center for further inspection is an emergency pursuant to Wisconsin Statutes 59.52 paren 29 paren B, in which the public health or welfare of the county is endangered if the garage floor would collapse into the basement of the building. Be it further resolved that the necessary site preparation of the southeast end of the Administrative Center Phase 1 of the project shall be on a time and materials basis, and the total cost shall not exceed $115,000. Be it further resolved that as a result of such declared emergency, the County Administrator and Facilities Director are hereby authorized to proceed with requesting quotes from contractors to do the asbestos abatement and all necessary site preparation work. Be it further resolved that following the site preparation work in Phase 1, the County Board shall consider in Phase 2 of the project the best alternative to fix the garage floor on a temporary or permanent basis. Fiscal note, the estimate of Phase 1 of the project cost is $115,000 on a time and material basis, with the funds to be transferred from the undesignated general fund. The estimated cost of Phase 2 to fix the floor will be determined following the completion of Phase 1. I move its adoption.
Moved by Tom Rauch, seconded by Andrea Richmond. Steve, you're going to continue?
With that, I'd call Jim Spiropoulos to just briefly describe and answer any more questions in detail. I think the resolution went into quite some clarity, but I think Jim can give you a little bit a further description of how he sees proceeding with this and then answer questions.
The biggest thing right now is just getting everything ready so that we can get the two ceilings out of the way. We can actually see the whole underside of the floor, get the asbestos out of the way, probably have a contractor do some core samples through the floor at various points to find out the extent of the damage, come back to this body in July or August with a recommendation for moving forward. I can answer any questions.
Questions for Jim. Ray Ebert.
Yeah, thank you, sir. I assume that by declaring an emergency, that puts in a different set of contracting?
The time and materials is only possible, doing the quotes is only possible if there's an emergency. Otherwise, you have to go out on a bid arrangement.
And then also, I would assume then that we'll get a proposal back, one to temporary fix and one to permanent fix?
That would be my recommendation, yes.
No, I want to thank you, folks. This is kind of what I was looking for last month, and I appreciate your doing that. Thank you.
Further discussion or questions? Ralph Geary.
Get back to the asbestos in Phase 1. Are we removing the asbestos they can see then?
We're removing everything in the old dispatch area, which is the center portion. Linda, can you turn that computer on real quick? This is the south end of the building, south being to your right. I didn't have it on there quite right. The hatched mark area there is about 900 square feet, and that's basically the center three bays of where that south garage was. The part up on the upper right-hand corner is the garage that is existing, and then I don't know if you can see it there, the computer room hub is the other garage door that you can see on the south end of the building. We're talking about the center portion of that to include the hallway, because the affected floor goes over the hallway of about 900 square feet. So everything within that would be abated.
100%. There would be nothing above it.
Just the asbestos is taken out.
Right. But I mean, there wouldn't be any asbestos buried farther up.
The only asbestos is the floor.
The floor? And that'll... But that won't take it out of the total area. It'll just take it out of that area, you're saying?
Out of that hatched area, 900 square feet. And what that does is keeps us out of the computer room and keeps us out of the electrical room at this portion.
And how many total square feet is that per floor, the whole area?
The area that we're talking about?
No,
or the
whole area.
I think it's about 1,200, 1,300 for the whole south end of the building.
Okay, and that'd be the same amount of square footage on the basement then?
This is in the basement.
Okay, but then on the first floor it'd be the same amount of square footage.
Yes.
Okay, and none of it's usable unless we'd make a permanent repair then, right? We can't put offices back in there.
Correct.
We can't
store
stuff in there.
Right now they're both empty as we speak.
Jim Burns, did I see your hand up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I congratulate the resolution. I think it's a very measured, incremental approach to this problem, so thank you very much. And I will certainly support it. I guess there's this one question I had, and I was able to look back at the minutes from, or I was actually able to remember the, check the recording from the last meeting, but at the end of the discussion part, I indicated that I would like to move this. In fact, I moved it to refer to committee at the end of the discussion at the 21st, May 21st meeting on this agenda item. And so, and Mr. Doyle, you said that it would go to the Public Property Infrastructure Committee committee would hear it next, and then it would go to the Executive Committee. So I guess my question is, why did this go right to the Executive and not to the Public Property Infrastructure Committee? Because you didn't call for a second for my motion, and you just said it would go right to the Public Property would hear it first. So I guess my question is more or less more about the process than the actual resolution.
Legitimate question.
Our intention would have been to also have it on Public Works today, but Public Works meeting got moved ahead a week because a number of members were at Highway, and we felt this was important enough to ask for consideration this evening. Public Works has been moved from today, June 8th to June 15th. Right. There was no way to do that. It would have delayed it another week. And we didn't think there would be enough objection to accomplishing what is basically a different idea, doing it in two phases, which seemed to address most of the concerns that people had. Again, the majority of the board seemed to agree with our recommendation. We needed two-thirds. We attempted to come up with something that was addressing what we understood and interpreted to be the objection. So it wasn't a means to try to bypass the Public Works Committee. They just weren't meeting today, and this was the easiest way to accomplish that.
But when that report comes back, that you go to Public Works.
It will go through Public Works, certainly.
Okay, thank you. And I just, not to talk about this transcripts of meetings and recording, but, you know, I was able to go back and look, I noticed it was a special meeting at 5:30 today. I'm like, well, I thought this was going to go to our committee. So I went back and listened to the meeting, and actually made the motion. And Mr. Doyle said, well, it'll go to Public Works. There was no second. There was no discussion. And so that's why I think it's really important to have supervisors and public have access to the minutes, the recordings if possible. I think that's really beneficial. But I'm glad that we're able to do this tonight. I wish it would have done. I would have preferred to do it in our committee meeting, but I'm certainly glad it's going to be addressed tonight. Thank you.
Other questions or comments? Joe Billings.
What was the vote of the committee?
Unanimous. Any further discussion or questions? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Thank you.
One thing I wanted to point out to people: you will notice on resolutions in the future. In the back, we presently have where the county administrator, the finance director, and corp counsel initial reviewed, recommended, or not recommended, and it's now going to also have the chair for just the reviewed. I don't think it's appropriate for me to say recommended or not recommended, but I do think it's important that I see resolutions before they go too far. Every once in a while, I get a phone call from the media saying, hey, what about this new resolution? And it's kind of nice to know that I've actually seen it before I start commenting on it. So we're going to be, not that it would stop me, but so you're going to see that in the future. But again, I don't think it's appropriate for me to check recommended or not recommended, so it's only going to have reviewed only. Well, that's Margaret's. You're usually going to see SD/MN because they email it to me, and then I just email it to Margaret and ask her to initial it for me. So. All right. Is that the end of the agenda? I think we've done already. Update on state budget impact on La Crosse County.
Okay. Each of you received in your agenda packet a detailed review from Wisconsin Counties Association. I won't go through each one of the details, but I will highlight that. Before I get into some of the details on that, recall that one of the things that we're doing and you adopted at the last meeting was a leave without pay proposal, that policy that's going to our employees throughout the organization. We're getting very positive reaction so far, and at a future meeting I'll report the results of that. And one of the reasons I'm taking a moment just to highlight that is I mentioned to you that on one of the days that I will be taking off, we're organizing a Habitat for Humanity Work Day, which is next Friday the 19th. We've had so much interest in it, but many people aren't able to accomplish it that day, so we'll probably set another date later in the year as well. It will be with La Crosse Area Habitat. It will be at the Holman site. So if you're interested and want to join a number of us that are going to be trying to hit the right nail and paint the right wall and not spill too much paint, it's Friday, June 19th. Just let me know. We've got a number of people that are going. And if you are interested but can't make that date, just verbally let me know, and we'll be trying to set another meeting. It's another way of connecting. La Crosse area is not building a habitat house in City of La Crosse this year, though they've built a number of them, so it's a way of outreaching. Their other home that they're doing is actually in Westby outside the county, so we're trying to stick close to home. So just to let you know about that.
What time would that be on the 19th?
It would be from 9 to 4:30. You can work a half a day if you don't want to work the full day. And again, just let me know if you want to work with us on it. It's a chance to connect with other employees helping out.
Okay. Any questions for Steve on the budget impact? Okay.
Okay, and the budget report goes through some detail. There was some modification of what the state has impacted on us. Probably the only good news out of the issues is that they've sustained the CPE to county nursing homes. If that passes and is not line item vetoed by the governor, it will be positive by several hundred thousand to both of our nursing homes. They've reinstated most of the clean sweep program, but there is a debate of whether or not they will actually have the staffing to implement the grants, so that's still a question. They've increased the deduct in shared revenue from 1% to 3.5%. So while they moderated some of the impacts in human services by about a similar amount, they've ended up, I don't know if it's conscious, but taking it away in shared revenue. So the impact and gap that we're expecting into next year's budget is very similar to what I've reported before. As of the Cracker Barrel this morning, it's not clear that the Assembly and Senate will have the votes to pass. I'm not predicting that they won't, but that is still an open-ended question, and we're obviously monitoring it as quickly as much as we can. We will bring you a resolution this month through Executive Committee to start the budget process. We can't wait for the state to make their final decisions. We have to begin to prepare a budget, which again is why I've brought the Leave Without Pay proposal to start with some of the impacts that we'll have, and we'll be wanting to have more interaction from the board on what options to consider. This will be a challenging budget, as they all have been, but we are prepared to take on the work that's necessary.
Questions, comments? Brad Paff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Steve O'Malley, for your comments. This really is going to be an interesting budget for this county board this upcoming year because, you know, quite frankly, this economy and this environment that we're in right now is something that none of us have ever been in before. And I sure do hope that when we do the county budget that it just isn't the status quo of the past, because quite frankly, the economy of La Crosse County and the quality of life of the people that live in La Crosse County is starting to suffer. I can tell you, in the rural economy, there's a tremendous loss of equity that's taking place in the countryside. You know, dairy prices have dropped, you know, 50%+, and I understand that our county board can't deal with that, but I mean, I really think that this upcoming county budget, I hope that we have a more deeper, fuller conversation about these county programs and what we do here in the county and how it impacts people, because everybody's looking at us right now. Believe me, the general public is looking at their elected officials, and they're starting to demand assistance, and quite frankly, they deserve it. So I look forward to the upcoming budget, but I do hope that in the July planning meeting or something like that, that we can have a fuller discussion about maybe where our economy is here in La Crosse County, and how then our department heads can begin to anticipate some of the changing circumstances that are taking place and how we can be a little bit more flexible. And yeah, I think it's important that we have shared revenue conversations, and we have conversations about community aids, and we have conversations about, you know, nursing home bed fees. I think all that's important, but I think we need to get back to the human element here. And I know you can do that, Steve, because that's what you do, but I want to participate in that process because, quite frankly, it's a pretty difficult environment out there. Thank you.
The county board's role in the budget process starts this Wednesday at executive committee. We have the initial budget resolution, and in that resolution, it does mention that we are going to be starting early in terms of our role to talk about some of these issues in August, is it? So, yes, you'll have plenty of chance to get your feet wet there. John Menninger.
Yeah, I was at the Chamber of Commerce Cracker Barrel this morning, and I hadn't heard this before, but Jennifer Schilling said that the governor had actually proposed to cut shared revenue 10%. Now, I had not seen that in the media or WISC politics. That was kind of something new to me. It was only at the last minute that it went to 2.5%. So I guess for that, we should be grateful. But as we also said this morning, there's no Republican votes for this budget in the Senate or the Assembly. So the Democrats are going to have to figure out how to get 50 votes out of 52 and 16 or 17 votes out of 18, which will be challenging. But I think the real thing to keep an eye on is the conference committee at the end of the process, because they can pass the Assembly can pass a budget now knowing it's not real, and the Senate can pass a budget knowing it's not real. It's when it goes to the conference committee that the price of poker goes up. And that's where I think the most danger can be done. So,
well, and if I might just comment, I want to take this moment to really recognize leadership of Jennifer Schilling. She was key on recognizing the needs of county government in this in a way that we haven't seen that recognition at Joint Finance, at least during my tenure since I've been back to Wisconsin. She helped identify and lead the charge on everything from the shared revenue cut. I did know about that 10% cut. That would have been $480,000 instead of $160,000 to La Crosse County, leading the charge on trying to get the youth aids reinstated, which was done as well, the CPE for county nursing homes. We were well represented on Joint Finance by Jennifer's work, and it wasn't about just that she's been here before. She knows the essential work the counties do, and I heard her articulate that in various forms, and I know what she did because I had reports back from people that were there watching the interaction of the committees, the lobbyists that represent us through WCA and others. She was key in this. Who knows what will happen out of the process, but if you get a chance, recognize Jennifer. She represented this county very well and understands the essential work that we do.
Other questions or comments? Ralph Geary.
Well, we always comment about we want more money on shared revenue, we want more money on highway, we want more money here and there. Has anybody got any suggestions for the state where they should spend less money? You know what I mean? Everybody wants more. I mean, that's just human nature, but you know, they got to balance the budget too. Does anybody happen to have insight in the area?
Well, Ralph, don't get me started. The entire budget still goes up $4 or $5 billion while they're cutting counties in the very time that we are needing to provide more services. So they are spending more money in other places, but it's not at the county level, and instead they're actually cutting us while we have increased caseloads in human services, increased caseloads in economic support, increased demand for services. So they are spending it somewhere else, but it's not with counties.
Right. Well, that's my comment. If we know they're spending more in other areas, should we be sending them a resolution saying maybe you should be spending less in that area and more in...
Well, we have also asked them repeatedly to give us a break on some of the mandates so that we could spend less. You know, we've never had that happen yet either. Jill Billings.
I just want to say while we're thanking people, I think Jerry Huber's been to Madison several times, and I know that some of our staff people, economic support, I know, and I'm sure others have been in Madison to talk about how the budget will affect our county specifically. And so I think that opinion and that the information that they've given has helped shape this in to some extent.
Very good point. Very good point. Tara Johnson.
Just really quickly, and it started with the Joint Finance public hearings back in the beginning of, I don't know, whenever it was, very early, maybe March, end of March, or where there were several supervisors from this board who laid the foundation for those same messages to get across to Joint Finance. And I think that that's an important role as well. And to Supervisor Geary's question, I think it's not only where the state can make cuts, but it's, you know, they have a history of unbalanced budgets that they have created for themselves. So this is of their own making largely. And there's a lot of revenue that's not being collected right now. So cuts need to be made. They need to be doing, you know, due diligence to budgets like this county board does due diligence to budgets. And there's a lot of untapped revenue right now at the state level. That's what I would say to them.
Dandina.
Well, Ralph opened it up and he said, have you got any ideas? Minnesota charges licenses for trailers. Wisconsin does not. You can have a boat, you can have a big boat, and you don't need a license. Your trailers for hauling debris around, you don't need a license. Horses were exempt because they were a beast of burden years ago. We got more riding horses in La Crosse County than we got cows today, and they are not assessed at all, and they're worth a lot of value. Now, if you want to get some in political, you know, I could lose my county board seat over this one, but start assessing horses and trailers, and you could generate a lot of income.
Alpacas? You start getting on alpacas, and then you got a problem, buddy. That it for the budget? How many people here have email? I got a thing from the sheriff today on the jail audit report, and I got a couple calls from media, and I'm wondering if I was the only one who got the jail audit report or if that went out to all board members. Just to judiciary and law? Okay. Steve, can you get that to all county board members, like even tonight if you have a chance when you go upstairs? Well, then you won't forget about it. Because that was the report that you know that we had commissioned few months ago.
I've done several interviews on this already, but it goes to judiciary and law tomorrow. I'll forward it on as directed. But the National Commission on Community Health Corrections is just a set of recommendations that judiciary and law will start to work with. We're also asking for response from HPL, and the Judiciary Committee will give us guidance on our next steps.
But this falls in the category of if you're going to read it in the paper, you better have read it from us first. So that's what I'm trying to accomplish. All right. Anybody? Ralph.
Well, in regards to that report, does Corporation Council review it and this is just a report, or does this have any of...
This is the report from that organization,
right,
to us.
I mean, do we have does the county board at planning have a meeting on it, a closed session on it?
Judiciary and law is going to deal with it first, and they'll tell us what they think should happen next.
Or Mr. Shepherd, if we need a meeting.
Bill has certainly read it already. And,
yes. Yeah. Our primary goal is to help guide as we refine the future contracting and what processes use that those standards, which are national, are incorporated in our expectation from our health provider.
Okay, anybody have any other items for future agenda? Is there a motion to adjourn? By Dennis Monti, second by Jerry Sobranek. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.